Hi, my name's Mike Gibb. Greetings from sunny Las Vegas, where I'm here covering ACA International Spring Forum. I also run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'll be moderating today's webinar on how to make the most out of the last month of income tax season. There's only about a month left before the deadline for individuals to file the 2018 income tax returns, but there's still plenty of time for creditors and collection agencies to make the most of income tax season and try and maximize their recovery rates. Today, a panel of credit and collection industry executives will share their tips and techniques to help make the most out of the last month of tax season. This webinar is being generously sponsored by PDC Flow. You'll get the chance to hear about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the armed industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the credit and collection industry. The site is free for anyone to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Tracy Dudek is the Chief Operating Officer for State Collection Service, responsible for overseeing the organization's production and support areas, including the company's extended business office and third-party collection divisions, as well as patient engagement, business intelligence, client services, and human resources, among others. Tracy's been involved in the receivables industry for more than 20 years. She has been instrumental in enhancing the technological tools that put State Collection Service ahead of many others in the healthcare receivable space. Additionally, she's played a key role in the growth of State Collection Service's multiple locations. Tracy's regularly asked to speak at conferences and webinars like this one around the country. She's a member of the Healthcare Financial Management Association, and she earned her bachelor's degree from Marquette University and holds fellow and scholar degrees from ACA International. Dave Hintz is the inventory strategy and production support manager for State Collection Service. He has nearly three decades of experience in the receivables management industry, working with clients across various sectors. In his current role, Dave oversees the business intelligence unit for State's entire operation. During his tenure with the company, he has enhanced the utilization and accuracy of scoring and segmentation strategies while refining workflow dynamics to further encompass the usefulness of segmentation. He and his team have implemented numerous technological enhancements throughout the organization and continue to refine the company's suite of vendors to ensure the best possible resources for client portfolios. In his free time, Dave enjoys various outdoor activities, including fishing and hunting, as well as coaching youth sports. Dwayne Wells has been at Credit Solutions LLC in Lexington, Kentucky for 8 years. For the past 5 years, he has been the trainer, and for the past 6 years, he has overseen the collections department. Unfortunately, Brian Watkins had a last-minute scheduling conflict and cannot participate today. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them as our discussion is ongoing. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available later today on the webinar recordings page of AccountsRecovery.net. Finally, I want to ask everyone to take a minute and fill out the survey that should pop up on your screen today after the webinar is over. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. Participating in the survey helps me develop content that is what you're looking for and to find the speakers you want to hear from. Really appreciate it if you can take a minute and participate. With that, let's start today's discussion. First, what I'd like to do is ask the panel, have you noted any changes in your usual collection patterns during income tax season that can possibly be tied back to either the government shutdown or the changes in the tax code that has some individuals receiving smaller refunds this year? Tracy, maybe you want to take that one first, if you don't mind.
Actually, this is Dave. So,
go ahead, Dave.
We haven't seen any firm changes per se. We took a little bit of a wait and see approach as we got into the tax season. IRS opened up the filing season on January 28th, which I believe was a day earlier than last year. With the shutdown and calling workers back, they had some of the forms and things for more complicated tax refunds that they had not gotten completed for some of the tax filers and preparers out there, but for the simple forms, those consumers were able to file pretty much on time and go from there. I've seen some conflicting reports. So I'll say we've monitored more than usual what, if any, impact there may have been. There were some reports early that some of the average refund sizes were down significantly, up to, I saw 17% on one article.
I saw that too.
More recent reports are saying that they may be up as much as I thought, $22 or 3%.
Okay.
On other more recent articles, as recent as last week. So it's possible that the people who filed earlier just had a smaller tax refund. I'm sure consumers are a bit confused around the withholding changes that they may or may not have done. And that may impact individual consumers.
So overall, you really haven't noticed any changes in either the interest the interest or commitments in making payments, or the size of the payments themselves relative to years past?
No, we have not. And we tend to measure. We've had a fair amount of growth here at State year over year, so we kind of use the prior year month over month increases, and we're right in line with the prior years.
That's great. Dwayne, what about you? Have you noted any changes in your collection pattern this year?
No, I would agree with Dave there. Actually, we've probably seen a little bit of an increase year over year at this point, so I would agree with them. It really hasn't affected us at all as well. We are doing very well. At this point,
is there anything that you can attribute the increase to? Is it, doing a better job of collecting? Is it, more of an interest in making a payment? Is it higher refunds? Is there anything that you can point to as a possible reason why you're seeing more payments this year?
One of the things I think is we've instituted a little bit of technology there with the, I don't know, name drop call miner, I guess. We've been monitoring our reps and looking for keywords and phrases, making sure they're using the proper talk-offs and getting down payments and really pushing for tax time payments. And they've done a very good job, and it's shown so far.
So you think it's just more of a result of better analytics that you're deploying and sort of better oversight of what the collectors are doing while they're on the phones?
Yes, I believe that, yes.
Okay. So like I said, we've got about a month, give or take a few days, until income tax season. So the April 15th deadline, people obviously can file for an extension, but most people try and get that done by April 15th. Is it too late for agencies to do anything more to improve their collection rates, or has the die been cast, or is there still time for agencies to try and take advantage of income tax season? Maybe people were watching The Bachelor and consumed by it. Now that it's over, they realize there's a month left of income tax season. Is there anything left that they can possibly do? And Tracy and Dave, maybe you can take that one first.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I must have missed The Bachelor this season or something. but in any case, it's not too late. We just talked about this morning. We had two clients come to us toward the end of last week asking the same question, what can we put in place to still take advantage of tax time? And, typically we're having conversations with our clients in the fourth quarter and in early January, talking about the strategies that they'd like to employ with us during tax time. And a few that didn't make the choice then have now decided, hey, let's still do something, and putting some settlement programs in place actually for both of those clients. So, if you're creating new letters or statements that go out for a settlement program, that might be difficult at this point. But the verbal programs work fantastically, and that's where you've got, somebody on the phone and you're negotiating and, using the settlement offer that the client has given you within those parameters. So we just had two, and we don't think it's too late. And in our world, or at least according to the budget that Dave and our CFO create for us, that, that tax time flows even well past April 15th,
okay,
really through the month of April, just because you have those people that, just don't file until the last minute, even though they might be due a refund. So, Dave, you could talk a little bit more about how long tax time tends to last for us, but it doesn't stop on April 15th.
Yeah, and I'll echo the sentiment about using CallMiner. We've had that in place for a few years, and that definitely helps encourage the conversation, making sure the representatives are going through that. And then to carry through to later into the season, you know, we need to continue to do that. The assumption is, you know, big picture, that you're going to get to fewer consumers who will get a refund later in the tax season. But not everybody files right away. Some have tax preparers that help them. Some of the consumers out there that thought they might owe money or were worried about it just didn't do it until later in the tax season, and then you find out they'll get a refund. The other thing that happens is you get consumers who are, and we're very deep into the cycle, we're all aware of it, that are living paycheck to paycheck. They may get a tax refund, and it may not come to us to pay the bill that we're working on, but they may pay off other debt with that refund. And at this point in the season now, we can talk to them about money they might have each month going forward to get them onto a payment plan. So we may not see all settlements or balance and full payments come out of this next month or so, but we'll capture a lot of people onto a payment plan because now they have some of the other bills taken care of with the refund, and now they're able to do that $50 or $100 monthly payment going forward.
Excellent. What about you, Dwayne, and at Credit Solutions? Is there anything that you're seeing or doing to kind of improve collection rates, or do you think it might be too late?
I would agree with Tracy and Dave there. I think we're, you know, what we've seen in the past is typically more toward the end of April is kind of when it drops off. So we'll continue doing what we're doing and using our dialing strategy and moving toward to those that may not have got big tax refunds, but pushing for the down payment, getting them set up on a payment arrangement that they can actually afford. And like Dave said there, some of these people have already used their tax refund to pay off other debts. So it does allow them to free up some money to just negotiate to get maybe higher payment arrangements than what we could have. So I don't think it's too late. I think you just got to keep smiling and dialing, so to speak. So,
well put. Tracy, going back to something you said about the settlement offers, is that pretty much the, you know, like you said, it might be too late for a letter campaign, but, you know, are you seeing your clients asking or sort of making changes to their settlement parameters, you know, as we get closer and closer to the deadline for tax season?
Yeah, absolutely. We just had a client sweeten the pot, so to speak, and give us an additional percentage discount to work with. And of course, they want to see reporting on how we're taking advantage of that. But in this scenario, they've given that increased settlement capability to us and a competitor. So I think they're going to just watch us continue to pitch that new program they gave us and how we compete with each other. So yeah, I think the clients are still very engaged in what else can we do during tax time. I know that we have weekly or biweekly calls with most of our clients, and that's a good opportunity for us to talk to clients about the programs that they have in place and what's working, or give them suggestions on what we could, you know, do with their approval to take more advantage of tax time. So there may be little changes that can be made depending on the client, but, you know, we're finding that we do need to initiate some of those conversations. And typically when we initiate the conversation, the client's really open to our suggestions. So I would say one of the best things you can do is talk to your client, even if they don't have a settlement arrangement today, and just discuss what the benefits would be of that. Dave, anything you want to add? We had a recent client that came to us recently and, you know, went from, I believe it was a 20% discount to a 35% discount. We had another client come to us and say that they want to take what we're offering during tax time because it's so beneficial, and just continue to offer that even after tax time. So, you know, I think clients are willing to evaluate their strategy based on the data that you share with them.
In that situation where the client, you know, increased the settlement offer from 20 to 35%, is that, do you just immediately, when you call those individuals, do you let them know about the new offer, or do you try and get them in at 20? And if they, you know, and then if they have some, you know, if they stall, or if they have, you know, might not be interested in it, do you then sort of go back? Do you then offer the sweeter offer? How do you sort of play that, you know, sort of include that or integrate that into your scripts?
Yeah, we always do a top down negotiation, so we always start with the balance, and then when the consumer cannot pay the balance, then we're doing full, you know, getting the full information about the consumer situation to make the best offer to them. You know, we also use account scoring strategies, and so knowing, you know, what the score is on that account may alert an agent to skip a couple layers of the negotiation based on the score, and maybe more quickly go to that settlement offer. But we really do measure in our speech analytics the top-down negotiation on all calls.
Got it. At this point, I just want to pause the discussion briefly for a moment and say a few words about the sponsor of today's webinar, PDC Flow. PDC Flow's payment hub offers a single platform for accounts receivable teams to quickly send an invoice, collect a credit, debit, or ACH payment, and obtain a signature in one simple and secure workflow. The software offers text, email, chat, and IVR payment channels, a customizable online payment portal, and robust reporting ideal for debt collection agencies, medical billing companies, hospitals, and healthcare organizations. Programming and customer operations for PDC Flow's national client base have been completed in-house in Ogden, Utah, since the company's founding in 2003. Thanks to Don, Hannah, and the team at PDC Flow for sponsoring today's webinar. Now, let's pick up with our discussion. Going back to something that both Dave and Dwayne mentioned, and this question will be for you, Dwayne, in terms of where a situation where an individual may not have much to pay the balance, but where you may be able now to engage them in a payment plan, how do you make that approach? How do you make that pitch to an individual when you get them on the phone?
Well, we definitely speak with them and find out what kind of situation they're in negotiation. We're obviously going to ask for, you know, if they have filed their taxes this year, you know, what type of refund. And a lot of times the consumer's letting us know what they can do. But also we also try to drive that conversation to try to get the largest down payment to get them to pay off. You know, we strictly strive to get an account paid off 3, 6, 9, or 12 months. So obviously in order to get them in, if it's a large balance, to get them a 12-month payment arrangement, we're going to need a large down payment. So we just, you know, Q&A session with them, see what the best fit is for them, because obviously we don't want to put them in a situation where that payment arrangement is going to break, but also right. We need to get our client paid in the shortest time possible. So it just depends on the conversation. We do kind of go over disposable income and the Q&A session to kind of get an idea also what their normal income level is like, so we don't put them in a strain. So it's really left up to the collector, but also we also monitor that just to make sure that we have done everything that we can possibly do to collect more money on that particular account.
So during the course of the conversation, you will ask, you know, how much of a refund somebody received?
Yeah, we'll ask them, you know, we start off with paying the account in full. If they can't do that, right. Obviously we're trying to get the balance in full. Sure. And then we'll ask, you know, what we would need to do today would be this amount of dollars. And we'll see in negotiations what we need to do going forward. If we can get a down payment and get it on a payment arrangement, or if we do need to offer a settlement and they can't take advantage of the settlement at that point in time, then obviously we would work that settlement in as well. But we're definitely trying to get the balance in full paid before we off the settlement.
So you don't necessarily view it as a winning or losing situation if an individual tells you, oh, I chose to pay off this debt instead of yours?
Well, we kind of, you know, we'd like to have ours paid first, but unfortunately, first come, first serve. You know, when people are getting those tax refund checks, pretty much the first person gets the right party contact depending on how much debt they owe, they're obviously going to get the biggest chunk first. So we've been pushing probably since the middle of January, trying to get an idea from our consumers when they're filing their taxes, when do they plan on filing those taxes, going on and trying to set them up on a down payment and negotiating the remaining balance once they do receive their tax refund. And that's what we've been working towards since about mid-January, is going on and putting that note in their head that, hey, we would be able to work with you once you do receive your tax refund.
So that's sort of a part of the conversation you're having, you know, maybe sort of January, February, you know, are you planning on filing your taxes? Have you filed them yet? And then sort of storing that and then following up with them, you know, sort of on the date or when they roughly said they were planning on doing it.
Yes. Or we'll go on and post date it out for them if they would like, okay. And I'll give them the opportunity to call back and cancel that payment if the refund has not been received. We try to go on and get them locked down and get their debt, you know, secured and out of their hair, so to speak, and not have to worry about it anymore if that tax refund does come through on the time that they allow us to post date that out.
Got it. Tracy Davis, that's something that you're doing at State as well, is sort of checking in on when people say they plan to file and sort of staying on top of them?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, this is one more source of income for our consumers, and, you know, that's during the tax season, we'll communicate by phone or with letter to more consumers, and the more we can talk to them about what's going on and figuring out what the right solution is to get the debt resolved, the more opportunity we have. So we're definitely asking about it, what they're seeing, if they're anticipating a refund. You know, again, we can do payments of intent to get, you know, some commitment up front while they wait for the refund. We can do things like that as well, just to make sure that they're kind of locked into resolving the bill with us. As was just alluded to, you know, we're competing with not only other agencies out there trying to collect on past due bills, but, you know, people are buying big screen TVs for that Super Bowl that was in the end of January, February. Used car sales, I think 3-4 years ago I read reports that like 80% of used car sales are in the first 4 months of the year. And a lot of people use that tax refund as their down payment on those cars. So there's a number of retail outlets that are competing with us to get those funds. So we do have to do a bit of sales with the consumers to, you know, facilitate ways to accept that payment and or work around the timing of the tax refund to do what we can to get the bill resolved.
I'm curious if either of you or if either of you have ever heard, is it okay for a collection agency to sort of help an individual get their taxes done, you know, sort of get them set up with someone to do their taxes? Is that something that's been tried, or is that something that's not allowed?
I would not personally do that at all. I if you look at credit reporting, for example, there are some stiff penalties for improperly advising people of what can happen to their credit file. I wouldn't even want to open that door up to representative on our floor to start giving advice on how to file their taxes or things like that. I've seen retailers do it, but when I've seen that in the past, they'll typically hire like an H&R Block or somebody to come in and file the refund or the return for the consumer, and then they, if they're getting a refund, they can use that refund as like a down payment. But I don't even think even the retailer themselves do it. They hire that out.
Right. Would that be something a collection agency may be able to do? Just partner with an H&R Block, for example, to try something like that? Or would that be sort of too complicated, or you really kind of need to be in person to do that?
Yeah, I think that's something that, you know, that you want to do in person. I don't know that I would want to put our agency at risk, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I think so. I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. I think I would leave tax people doing their job and let collection people do their job. That's the way I feel about that.
Yeah, I would agree.
That's probably the best strategy. Just a reminder to everybody, questions are encouraged. If you have any questions, type it into your Zoom webinar control panel, and we'll be happy to present them to the panelists and see what kind of information we can get. With that, curious, Dwayne, Tracy, and Dave, what your best strategy this season has been at maximizing collections, and if it's if whatever's working this year is the same as what's worked in years past. Dwayne, maybe you can go first this time.
Well, you know, years past, we've actually lettered during tax time. This year, we didn't send out any kind of tax time letter, so we headed off, like I said, early and often with our right party contacts, getting in their ear, whether it be for find out when they're doing their taxes, when they plan on doing those, trying to get them set up with those down payments, trying to get them set up on their settlement offers to lock that in to maximize recoveries. But our main thing has been our talk-offs and our scripting and making sure our collectors are really pushing to capitalize during the tax season is what we've done.
Yeah, we take a two-tiered approach. We do send letters, and we work it in the talk-offs as well. The kind of the best, if I'm doing air quotes, the best strategy is really to do the two of those combined. In the future, when we have the ability to text or email, I'd like to incorporate those tools in as well. The main thing is you're trying to reach more consumers with the message that they can use that tax refund to repay their
right.
debt. And which, you know, different consumers are going to want to respond to different methods of communication. Some may choose to open the letter, some may not. If our representatives are telling them you should have gotten a letter recently, or you're going to get a letter soon, they'll be looking for it. In the collections environment, we know our letters are pretty generic, and the envelope in particular is about as generic as you can get. It's worse than junk mail. I mean, it's just white, right? So, getting people to
open. That's how you really feel.
Yeah, we do some of that with our talk offs to get consumers to look for the letters. But we find that if you reach to them, or if you happen to leave a message, depending on where you're set, how you're set up, and then you get a letter in combination with that, we'll talk to more consumers that way.
You know, I'll just add that Dave's probably being modest about his letter strategy, because it's a very complex strategy, and he keeps asking for more money every year to send more letters. So we've done a little, I would say the opposite of Dwayne, is that we continue to send more and more tax letters, but with a very score and other data point driven strategy. And that letter process really starts the last week of January and goes in waves all the way through about this, probably one or two more small waves that go out yet in March. So Dave has a very data-driven process for who gets what letters when. And one of the early on things that Dave and I used to debate about, but he's convinced me, he would say, here's all the accounts by which clients are getting letters. And there'd always be accounts that are skip trace accounts, you know, where we have a good address, but don't have phone numbers on them, and we've never contacted the consumer, and they might be maybe more in the medium score range. And I always thought, like, why are we going to send letters to these, you know, mid-level accounts that we've never talked to? You know, don't we want right. these letters to hit the people that are going to get the money? And so Dave's turned me into a believer in that strategy, and that there is value in reaching out to those accounts that you don't have phone numbers on, into that more medium score range, because when people get a tax return, they kind of come out of the woodwork and they want to help, you know, themselves, help their situation, and when they have the funds, are willing to take care of an account that maybe they've known in the back of mind is always out there, but haven't had the ability to take care of. So, you know, those accounts are not ones I ever thought would be really good ones for lettering, but we continue to do that. And it's worked. I will comment, you know, is this our best strategy? I don't know if it's our best, but it's our newest. We implemented a text pay solution on a very limited scale. It's very basic. We put it on our statements. Just started that at the end of January, giving consumers the ability to text 12345. That's not really the number. I'm making it up. Text 12345 the word pay, you know, or whatever you, right. you choose for that. And while it's not in the tens of thousands, it's more in the bunch of hundreds. People that have initiated a text pay and landed on our portal, it's better than none, and it's not no expense to us beyond what we would normally have. And so we've allowed our telephone agents to talk to consumers about the text pay option, but we also put it on our statement. So we're looking, you know, it launched this year in a small way. We'll be watching for how we can make that a bigger part of what we do the rest of this tax time and through the rest of the year. And then, as Dave said, really looking at other texting strategies, because a text is a whole lot less expensive than a statement or a letter going out sure. for next year's strategy.
Dwayne, curious if you could share the reason, you know, why you opted not to send any letters this year, and sort of what was the strategy behind that?
Well, in years past, we didn't really see the uptick we thought we would see, so we mm-hmm. we chose to save money on letters and focus more on our dialing strategies and our propensity to pay accounts. The higher scores and test that this year to see if it made a difference. And as I said earlier, you know, I kind of agree with Dave. I think a lot of times when you send a letter to someone, as generic as it is, it just gets thrown in the trash can. So it's just start losing money on that. That's where we can make that call and try to increase the opportunity to speak to someone concerning, you know, the taxes. But I think that's the reason why we chose to do so, is just to give ourselves a better opportunity and not really waste money on something that someone doesn't look at to begin with.
So, and you said that your collections are up this year. So not only are yeah. you collecting more money, but your expenses are down as well, which has got to be a exactly. win-win for the agency.
It is. Yes.
Oh, congrats. That's awesome. Question that came in, and it's funny because it's actually the next question I was going to ask related to staffing. And the question that came in from the audience, is anyone on the panel allowing their collectors extra hours on the phone, meaning overtime during tax season? Does anyone want to go first?
I'll take that. We have here at Credit Solutions, we've offered a few nights a week, also on some Saturday work, depending, you know, because our hours of operation are typically till 6 in the evening. So we have opened that up for those that want to work and take advantage of overtime during the tax season. So yes, we have here at Credit Solutions.
Okay. And at State, we do not typically offer overtime and anything extra beyond normal right now. We've actually definitely reduced the overtime, and we're still seeing a good return. So, you know, out of our, let's call it just over 500 telephone people, you know, we're trying to manage to the tune of, you know, less than about 300 hours of overtime across all those people. So we're keeping it to really just those handful of very top people that we know we're going to get the return on the investment for those folks. And then I wanted to add in the area of working hours here, not just the overtime, but finding the most productive hours for the portfolios mm-hmm. that you're working. And, you know, we're part of a benchmarking group, and there were some ideas shared back in the fall about, gosh, Friday night seems to be a great time to reach folks. We were a little skeptical of that, weren't sure. We'll give some credit to Tim Haig for a minute here. And he said, well, you know, give it a try. And, you know, we're trying to reduce the Saturday hours because we're finding more and more agents aren't very excited about working that weekend shift. So we exchanged some Saturday hours at the first of this year for some extended Friday night, Friday until 7 p.m. Central Time. Normally we're open till 5. And we found a really nice return on that exchange of Saturday morning hours to Friday night hours. So, you know, we're expanding that to a few of our other locations, and that's been real productive here during tax time. So we'll monitor that to see if it holds true after tax time. But I'd say if you're not evaluating the hours that you're working and just constantly looking to adjust based on the consumer trends and where you're reaching people when they're calling in, it's worth taking a look, and it may be different for different portfolios.
Are the collectors themselves happier to be working Friday nights instead of Saturday as well?
Yes, that is funny because we originally thought no, but people want their two-day weekend. Sure. So yeah, these people are happy. Now, we haven't stopped Saturday altogether, but we've reduced Saturday hours in exchange for a little extended time on Friday night. This is in our third-party collection area, mm-hmm. and so far, so good.
That's great. Dwayne, the overtime policy that you were talking about, is that something new this year? Is that something that you've always done during tax season or throughout the year?
Typically, we will open that up during tax season. It's nothing we've started this year. We just, that's typically something we do to allow the collectors. They want mm-hmm. an opportunity to cash in on this time of season. So that's something we always do.
Have there been any changes at either of your firms in terms of staffing levels? Do you increase staff during tax season or with training and compliance? Is that too much of a headache to try and do that?
We at State, we have not necessarily changed staffing levels at all. We may change, and we do change the dialing strategies based on our score segments, but we don't staff up, so to speak.
Right. Sound like Macy's hiring for Christmas.
Yeah, no, we don't do that.
Got it.
I would agree with Tracy there. We don't do that. It's just too costly to do that. And
sure.
So
that makes sense. Tracy, we talked a little bit sort of the collectors being happier going from Saturday to Friday nights. I'm curious if there are any other ideas or what's worked best this tax season or generally in any tax season to keep collectors and staff motivated to keep working the phones?
Well, you know, we use a gamification tool, and okay. we have the ability in that tool to create duels, which is, you know, I'm going to challenge Mike to a duel today, and we're going to compete on how many checks over the phone we can take today or how many dollars and in immediate payments I can get today. And I don't know that that's any different
cool.
It's not necessarily different during tax time, but we certainly increase the goals during tax time because
sure.
We know that those immediate pays should be higher. And so as long as we keep those incentives fresh, that keeps people motivated. We don't do as many, you know, the full month type incentives. We're doing more of the daily or the weekly incentives and kind of in that mode of instant gratification. I will note one thing we do when we create those incentives is ensure that people with like skills are competing with each other. So we don't have, you know, your top person competing against, you know, maybe a new hire and they're always going to be winning and then the new hire feels bad. So there is some supervisory oversight over you know, kind of who's challenging who in that gamification tool.
That makes sense. What are some of the incentives you're offering in terms of, you know, for those duels?
They're as small as you can get a soda, you know. seriously, it's as small as a soda and, you know, as big as, you know, we've got some video gaming systems tend to be a hot ticket around our offices. Like, you know, I'm old, right? But I don't know, the Xbox ones and, you know, I don't know. I grew up on Atari, but PlayStation? Oh, Dave said PlayStation. Okay. But you know, those are good prizes. And then always TVs and speakers and Beats headphones, those
sure.
kind of prizes.
What about you, Dwayne? What have you been doing at Credit Solutions to keep the staff motivated during tax season?
Well, most of our staff stays pretty motivated for tax season because it is the best time of year, especially with commissions and bonuses and that sort of thing. But most of the time, our floors are running daily competitions, whether it be based on a paid in full payment or large payment. We have a little spinning wheel that we have up on our TV that if they hit that mark, they can go up and spin and possibly, you know, get it, earn a half hour of PTO or just different things like that, direct pays, depending on the paid in full they may get. We work from a pooled environment, so we may be able to give them $100 direct pay or things of that nature to keep them motivated daily. And sometimes, you know, we'll also do poker the same way. So if you get a certain paid in full for a certain dollar amount, you may get to draw one card or you may get to draw two if it's a higher balance. So at the end of the day, it's kind of Texas Hold'em, the best hand wins, and it can be a pretty decent size. Most of the time, it's usually a direct pay that that we put a dollar value on and helps them toward their totals toward the end of the month. So they seem to like it and they seem to love it. So that's what we do.
If anybody listening wants to type in their best incentive or any incentive ideas they have, happy to read them out to everybody listening in as an idea or just to sort of share. We talked a little bit about it, but I'm curious, have you noticed any changes in consumer behavior or intent during this tax season? Do consumers seem more or less inclined to want to pay their bills? Have you noticed just any sort of change in the tone or the content of the conversations that your collectors are having with individuals, Dwayne?
No, I really haven't. If anything, I've probably seen an uptick of those that are more willing to pay. And it also depends on the demographic as well. It depends on the area that we're working. You know, some we, you know, could be seeing the same type of consumer. But for the most part, I think we've seen pretty much an uptick in a lot of the demographic areas we're collecting in.
That's fine. I mean, I'm asking because I know that there have been some reports and some concerns that there's a recession on the horizon. And I'm just wondering if consumers are seeing that, fearing that, you know, maybe looking to sort of store some money away because they're worried about losing their job and maybe aren't as willing to pay or maybe a little bit more nervous. And just curious if any of that is filtered through or if that's just, it has, you know, those concerns aren't there yet.
Oh, no, I kind of touch base with what Dave said. I've been past Walmart the past couple of weeks, and it looks like everybody's fine with spending money on big TVs and grills. So I don't think there's a problem with that right now. So
if anyone wants to buy me one, they're more than welcome. what about you, David Tracy? Have you noticed anything different? Any apprehension or any or the opposite? Any, you know, are consumers more optimistic?
No, I think we're in
the
same situation. I mean, you know, the consumers we're dealing with are not typically worried about a recession until they've lost their paycheck.
Fair point.
Paycheck for so long, but that I don't think that's changed in 4 or 5 years. It seems to get a little progressively worse, perhaps, if they're so dependent on that next paycheck. But with low unemployment, we've been doing pretty good.
Great. That's not a bad thing. We've talked a little, you know, both of you, both companies have mentioned using propensity to pay and using scoring models. Curious, you know, have your scoring models been accurate predictors of propensity to pay during this tax season, or have you had to make any changes to the criteria or the weights or how the models are working? Tracy and Dave, maybe you can go first this time.
We haven't seen any difference yet. I mean, we monitor like our letter campaigns and our recovery is pretty heavily, pretty down to the account level. And we're seeing similar returns. I mean, the thing that changes for us during tax season is that you get that middle tier, maybe a little lower score, where some of those people have money and the ability to pay now. So year over year, we're seeing a consistent rate of that, and we still see those consumers that don't usually have any discretionary income have the ability to pay now during tax season. That won't come June, July, August, etc.
Right.
It seems to be pretty consistent with prior years so far.
Okay. Is that the same for you, Dwayne?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with Dave there. Not seeing much of a change at all.
Okay. Good to know that the models are working. You know, like I said, I'm here at ACA Spring Forum, and this is the third industry conference I've been to so far in 2019. And the vibe and the mood at the industry conferences definitely seems to be more optimistic, more hopeful about the credit and collection industry as a whole and how it's performing and how it's going to be performing sort of through 2019 and beyond, especially, you know, sort of, you know, from a regulatory standpoint, but also from a performance standpoint as well. And I'm curious, you know, if either of you have looked at sort of the impact that tax season has had and whether or not, you know, you can sort of project out for the rest of 2019 and whether, you know, you think 2019 is going to be better than last year or not based on what you've seen so far.
Well, I believe that, you know, for us here, it looks like 2019 is going to be really great for us. I'm a little worried about 2020, but 2019, I think, you know, I think this year is going to be continue to trend for us the upward, and or I'm hopeful anyway. So,
what concerns you about 2020?
I think, you know, the election year, you just, I think there'll be some uncertainties there. We won't get into that today on the call, but I think that might slow things down at the beginning of next year.
Just wanted to make sure everyone's on the same page. No worries. Tracy, Dave, what about you at State? Is there any, you know, is there any way to sort of project or look in the crystal ball at how 2019 is going to be based on tax season so far?
I mean, the way it's looking so far, I'll say we're looking to be ahead on recoveries against where we were last year. We've done that for 5 or 6 years in a row. We look at liquidation rates, we've been increasing them. You know, there's pricing strategy, there's pricing issues in the market, there's consolidation. Sure. We're in medical, there's a lot of consolidation amongst providers that is out there for us to contend with. But recoveries wise, we're doing as planned or a little better. I would think that will continue through the year.
Awesome. Just a reminder, we've got about 10 minutes left on the call. If you have any questions, now's probably you're getting close to your last chance to type it in so we can try and get to it before the end of our discussion today. So if you have a question, type it into the Zoom webinar control panel and I'll be happy to ask it of the panelists. I'd like to ask each of you or each company if you're making any adjustments to your post-tax season collection strategy, you know, looking sort of beyond April, May when tax season starts to sort of filter out. Are, you know, in terms of, you know, some of the changes you've made during tax season, will you continue to apply those, or is that, you know, or will you sort of go back to business as normal for, you know, sort of your post-tax season operation? Dwayne, maybe you can start.
Yeah, we will continue to do as we are doing now, but we'll scale our dialing campaigns back a little bit, you know, where we don't letter, we, the median accounts and lower scored accounts will obviously work less. We're giving them a few more calls now than we would. So we'll scale back our dialer a little bit and hit more of our top scored accounts a lot harder than we hit them hard, but hit sure. those more compared to those lower scores. And that would be one of our main changes that we make out of the tax season.
You mentioned not sending letters. I mean, will you go back to sending letters? You know, sort of.
Well,
we still
letter. Everything, okay. we just didn't send out the tax time letter, so.
Oh, no tax time, got it.
Yeah, yeah.
So you'll keep doing that. That wouldn't necessarily change. And I know, Tracy, yeah. you were talking about the new texting program. That's something that I'm sure will probably continue beyond tax season as well.
Yes, absolutely. So really under the theme of, you know, self-service for the consumers and us being easy to do business with or easy to work with. So texting, we're looking at the online portals that we use today and how can we make them easier for the consumers and make sure that the information the consumers get on the portals are, you know, is what they want and helps them to resolve their account. So we're under a portal review at the moment, and just that theme of e-communication and really trying to convert a lot more of our paper statements to e-statements where we can. So, you know, really our sure. theme this year is in the e-world.
um, you mentioned, Tracy, before sort of sharing data with clients. I'm curious to get both, you know, both companies' perspectives on communicating with clients, working with clients during tax season. Does that, you know, is it just more frequent conversations? Is it, you know, how, you know, is, does the dynamic change at all during tax season, or should it change at all during tax season versus, you know, the other times of the year?
Well, I'll start on that one. I mean, we get excited about tax time, so we want our clients to be excited about tax time. So sure. I'm not sure that we're necessarily talking more frequently or less, but the nature of those conversations, it, you know, is around money and taking advantage of tax time and what we're hearing on the phone and being willing to share where we have permission, what mm-hmm. other clients are doing and what works, what has worked for others, and who might we recommend those strategies to in our existing client base. So I just think the theme of the conversations are a little bit different, and you know, we want to collect as much as we can, and the client wants us to collect as much as we can. So yeah, it's really on us to make suggestions and keep that as a point of conversation.
Got it. Is that how you approach it as well, Duane, at Credit Solutions?
Yes, sir. Yes, I would agree totally with Tracy there. That's how we handle things here, and we're in constant communication, but you know, tax time, we do ramp it up just a little bit with our clients.
Got it. Makes sense. Well, I've run out of questions for now. I'm sure I can keep going, but we don't have any questions from the audience. But before I let our panelists go, what I'd like to ask each of them to do is just take a second or a little bit longer and either summarize, you know, one of the more important points I want to talk about or drive home, or take something maybe that you get a chance to talk about, but we're hoping to get a chance to talk about, or offer any parting words of wisdom to our audience today as we wrap up, just to sort of to finish the conversation today. Maybe Dave, Tracy, you guys wouldn't mind going first?
I'm gonna let Tracy jump in quick and just say, I mean, the
summary or any key.
This is the best time of year for us to reach consumers and get them to resolve their bill. This is the time of year where they've got the most available resources or funds to do that mm-hmm. on their end. One of the things you mentioned, what do we do now at the end of the tax season? Our one of our answers will be a bit unique to the medical world in that we'll shift more people to a payment plan, knowing that they may not have the larger tax refund, or know that the people that we're dealing with may truly need financial assistance if our clients offer that. So that'll be a shift that we'll make that'll be different perhaps than other industries, other asset classes. A lot of this is timing, whether you're reaching out to consumers with letters or calls or any other means, it's all around the timing of when that individual might get a tax refund or when they're planning what they're planning to buy, when they know they're going to get one. So
consumers should send up the bat signal when they get their tax refund, when they file.
That would be key. You need to have the right timing to do it. And that's part of why we do our letter strategies straddle over, you know, like a 6, 7, 8 week period, or maybe even a little more, is because we never know which consumers are going to get their refunds when.
Sure.
We have theory behind that around our segmentation that drives who goes first. But you constantly want your representatives asking for it at every call. And I think we both mentioned use a call miner to help reinforce that. That's a big part of it for us, is making sure that, you know, we're getting reports on a weekly basis that tells us how often our representatives are asking about it or talking about it during the call. So that's a big one for us.
Yeah, this may not be profound or anything, but we've really had a focus on making sure that the people that we expect to come to work and work 40 hours are actually coming to work and working their 40 hours. I mean, we need people here to talk to the consumers, It's a heavy inbound time of year. It should be a fun time, a time to make money and help people out. And so we've had a very large emphasis with our supervisors on doing things that make our collectors and our EBO representatives want to be at work and really take care of our employees during this time so they're here and they can take care of the consumers. So, you know, we need the people at work.
That's pretty important. I wouldn't want to sell those comments short, Tracy. That was well put. Dwayne, you get the last word.
Yeah, I would agree there. You know, we need people here at work in order to do their job, but also, you know, using call monitors well, making sure we're using our proper talk offs. The other thing too is, you know, we talk about people's financial situations as far as our consumers, but also our collectors. I don't know how other agencies there are operating, but this is one of their times of the year that they can actually change their financial situation as well, the opportunity to make more money. So in order to do that, you have to be here, you have to be in your seat, you have to be on the phone. So I would just challenge, you know, to put your best foot forward and obviously push to make as much money as you possibly can, especially here. They have an opportunity to make a lot of money in a short amount of time and can definitely change their situation for the rest of the year and maybe free up some time for vacation time when it really does get stressful when it's not tax season. So that's the way I would leave it.
Excellent. Well, Tracy, Dwayne, thank you so much for your time and your insights today. Really appreciate you taking the time to share this information with the audience and with the industry. I also want to thank PDC Flow one more time for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.pdcflow.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and stuck around and listened today. One final reminder, please take a minute to fill out the feedback survey, for today's webinar. I really would appreciate that. For anyone looking for a recording, it should be posted later today to accountsrecovery.net on the webinar recordings page. And please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. Tracy, Dave, Dwayne, thank you guys so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Excellent. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.